What's going on, everyone? Dean Klaus here. I'm an Air Force veteran. I'm a doctor of physical therapy and a recent candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in West Tennessee, and you are listening to Patriotism Under Fire. More people than ever are fed up exactly like I am, and I aim to do several things on this podcast in hopes to help with that. First of all, I want to help keep you up to date on current events and share my point of view as a human being that has common sense. Second of all, I want to give you guys a history in the form of proven conspiracies and other nefarious acts by governments around the world, including our own. And finally, most important of all, I want to help Americans get back in touch with our Constitution and other founding documents to help bring back our heritage and help bring back patriotism to our country. So thank you for joining me. I hope you will subscribe and help me reach more people so we can get this going. Now let's freaking go. Boom. That was like 10 seconds. If you listen to my news portion today, 10 second turned off, turn it back on, and let's get going on our article. So again, Article 1 of the Constitution, there are a bunch of different sections of it, and we're not covering the whole article in one day because we can't. I'll talk for 4 hours if we did that. So today we're going to cover sections 4, 5, and 6. And then next time we do this, we'll hit 7, 8, 9, maybe get 10, which is the last one, okay? I know it's dry. Hopefully you want to learn a little bit. Stick with me. I don't think today's going to be as long as the last time we went over the articles. I think we went over 2 and 3 last time. So, section 4, Article 1 of the United States Constitution says, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the places of choosing senators. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meetings shall be on the first Monday in December, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. It's the elections clause of our Constitution. It's the primary source of constitutional authority to regulate elections for the United States House of Representatives and Senate. It directs and empowers states to determine the times, places, and manner, but it also subjects it to Congress's authority to make or alter the state regulations. So, states have control over their elections, absolutely, but Congress can jump in and change things a little bit. They are limited on what they can change, but for the most part, it is the states. It's up to the states how they run their elections. So one example is Congress made it where there is an election day, federally election day. States still choose how they run the elections, what they do and all that. But Congress made it where, you know, the first Tuesday in November is election day. So this clause grants each level of government the authority to enact complete code for such elections, including the rules concerning public notices and voter registrations, voter protection, fraud prevention, blah, 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 everything with elections. Whenever a state enacts a law relating to a congressional election, it's exercising its power under this section of Article 1. The election clause makes states primarily responsible for regulating congressional elections. It vests ultimate power, though, in Congress. Congress may pass federal laws regulating congressional elections that automatically displace any contrary state statutes or enact its own regulations concerning those aspects of elections that states may not have addressed. People who made our Constitution, the framers of the Constitution, were concerned that states might establish unfair election procedures or attempt to undermine the national government by refusing to hold elections for Congress. So they gave some of that power to Congress to step in and regulate the elections. Excuse me. So there are certain things that Congress can't do. They can't come in and say, these people don't have a right to vote anymore in this state. They can't change the qualifications for voting in a state. You know, 18 to vote. I keep thinking 25. 25 is to like run for Congress. They can't change the age to vote. They can't change the qualifications to vote per the Constitution. They can't dictate who runs for offices outside of what the Constitution already says. There are certain things that they can't do. They are limited. For the most part, states are controlling their own elections, but Congress does have the power to jump in and do some. So that's our Section 4 of Article 1. Like I said, today's going to go faster, I think. Section 5. A little bit more to Section 5. Each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business. But a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. Each house may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member. Each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, excepting such parts as may be in their judgment require secrecy, and the yeas and nays of the members of either house on any question shall, at the desire of 1/5 of those present, be entered on the journal. Neither house during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that which the two houses shall be sitting. A lot going on in that. The framers in this section they vested the legislative authority of the United States government into the bicameral Congress. We already talked about that last time we discussed those sections. They described the membership of each house, which gave life to great compromise and did some good stuff. But Section 5 consists of 4 separate clauses. The first clause bestows on each house the power to judge the elections on its own members. After the Civil War, there were heated disputes about seating senators from former Confederate states. In the modern era, this provision comes into play when there is a challenge to the state declared winner of an election. Got that going on right now, right? Losing candidates dissatisfied with the state recount procedures may petition the relevant chamber of the Congress to decide the outcome. So Donald Trump is not in Congress, was not in Congress, is not in Congress. So he doesn't really necessarily fall in this, okay? But a good example here would be Raphael Warnock in Georgia. I think he ran against Perdue. Same thing happened in their election. They had a runoff election. They had an election the same day as Donald Trump supposedly lost, but it was close enough that they had to have a runoff in, it was either late December or early January, and Raphael Warnock won. But the same kind of shit happened in that election as happened in the regular November 3rd election, where you see vote counts live on TV decrease. Basically, everything that happened with Donald Trump's election happened with this election. Perdue, I keep wanting to call him Senator Perdue, he should have gone into the Senate and said, hey, the state is not doing their due diligence in recounting this, because Brad Raffensperger is an idiot, a corrupt idiot. I want Congress to decide this outcome. You know, it might have ended up the same, but he had that right per Section 5, Article 1 of the United States Constitution. So, moving on. Legislative recounts can be bitterly partisan, obviously. For example, House Task Force took months to review the 1984 election in Indiana's bloody 8th District, and GOP members walked out of the chamber in protest when Democrat Frank McCloskey was declared the winner over Republican Richard McIntyre by 4 votes out of 233,000 casts. Neither chamber can conduct business without a quorum, which a quorum is you know, a group of the majority that are there, they can't, they have to have certain people there to conduct business, basically. But the Supreme Court did long ago rule that the House determines whether a quorum is present when a bill passes. So again, the House can dictate its own rules. It can judge its own members. Yes, a quorum must exist, but the Supreme Court gave the House to dictate what a quorum actually is. So that basically, they could vote and say, Nancy Pelosi is our quorum. As long as she's here, we can pass anything. So Nancy Pelosi could just go in there and sign off on every bill that she felt like doing it, basically. Don't think that would fly, but basically that could happen. The second clause of Section 5 states each house may determine the rules of its proceedings. This is important because the legislative rules influence outcomes. The House Rules Committee determines which amendments may be offered to particular bills, thus shaping the debate on and ultimate content of legislation. Precedents interpreting Senate rules dictate preferential recognition of the majority leader over other senators. Significant advantage for the leader in setting the chamber's agenda. Senate Rule 22, and this is one that you should be familiar with, so listen up for this one. Senate Rule 22 is a high-profile example of the power of legislative rulemaking. The rule establishes a three-fifths threshold instead of a simple majority to invoke cloture and thereby limit debate. So Rule 22 establishes three-fifths people can invoke cloture and stop a debate on a bill. So in recent years, each party has accused the other. This is your nuclear option, by the way. Recent years, each party has accused the other of abusing the right of extended debate. Leaders of both parties threaten to challenge or to change Rule 22 unilaterally to insulate certain questions from the supermajority requirement of cloture. A Republican threat to utilize this so-called nuclear option failed to materialize in 2005. 8 years later, Democrats who had opposed the nuclear option when they were in the minority successfully invoked it when they were in the majority to speed up confirmation of nominees. Yes. Nuclear option. Senate Rule 22. Meanwhile, litigation brought to challenge the constitutionality of Rule 22 failed because the Constitution explicitly reserves questions of congressional self-governance to the houses themselves. They can decide how they what their own rules are. It's in the Constitution. Doesn't mean we like it, but it's in the Constitution. We would probably like it a lot more if we had legitimate elections. The second clause also gives each legislative chamber the power to punish its members. So, I mean, relatively, we haven't seen this a lot. We've seen it. It's happened to 5 House members and 20 senators, but it's not happened a lot. They can 2/3 can get together, vote to expel a member. That's all we'll say about that. The third clause of Section 5 states that the House shall keep a journal of its proceedings, which must be published from time to time. We have C-SPAN. You know, there's still a written accounting of most of things. We have C-SPAN where anybody can go on and watch what's going on most of the time. The constitutional command of transparency and public access in Article 1 is a cornerstone of the democratic processes in the United States. There needs to be transparency. We're a constitutional republic with democratic processes, okay? Got to have transparency. Obviously, we actually don't. Despite the fact that we can watch C-SPAN most of the time, these assholes like to do stuff at 2, 3:30 in the morning, specifically so people don't see them. They purposefully do stuff. So maybe we need to get something, amendment saying that they can't conduct business after 10 p.m. or something. Anyways, moving on. This same clause, third clause, also enshrines the value of public accountability. One-fifth of the members present on the floor of either chamber may demand a recorded roll call vote. Roll call votes in the House are tallied electronically, but Senate clerks call the names of each of the 100 members and record the outcome by hand. Makes sense. You have 435 members of Congress, 100 members of the Senate. So, makes sense. Final clause of Section 5 says that neither House during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that which the two houses shall be sitting. The founders were worried that the will of one house might be thwarted by the other's mischievous absence. House and Senate leaders typically work out a joint or concurrent resolution providing for adjournment, but some partisan gamesmanship can prevent it. 2007, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid announced that the Senate would hold pro forma sessions every 3 days so that George Bush could not make recess appointments. In 2012, the Republican-led House prevented the Senate from adjourning so that President Barack Obama could not make such appointments. The Supreme Court recently reminded the president that it is the prerogative of Congress to determine when it is in recess. Section 5 of Article 1 does not contain all of the how-to instructions, but it does contain a lot of how Congress and Senate run themselves. So it's a big deal. These are things you need to be familiar with, guys. I know it's dry. It's not fun. It's like teaching a class in high school. But it is what it is. All right. Need to know some of this stuff. So take it in bits if you get bored. You know, this is, I don't really know a way to spice this up too much, if you know what I'm saying. But I'm trying to help people learn. So you could share. Section 6, the last one we'll cover today. Next time, again, we'll try to come back. We'll try to hit 7, 8, 9, maybe 10. Maybe 10. We might do 7, 8, and then do one more on Article 1 with Section 9, 10. I don't know. We'll break it up how we need to. Moving on, Section 6, Rights and Disabilities of Members. It reads, the senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time. And no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. A lot going on there. These things, they read the way that they were written a long time ago. We don't talk like this. We don't write like this anymore. Some people have trouble understanding this stuff. So I get it. You know, I have to read some of this stuff multiple times just to rack it in my head and get it in there and understand it. It's worth it to do so with our Constitution. You got to know your rights. You got to know how your government is functioning. It's worth it. So stick with it. Article 1, Section 6. It contains several clauses of great significance, obviously. It specifies that senators and representatives shall be paid out of the Treasury of the United States and not by the states that they represent, which was the practice prior to our Constitution. So this emphasizes the fact that senators and representatives are offices of the federal government, not of the state where they were elected. It's a big deal. Now, another part of this to me, they shall be paid out of the Treasury of the United States. I've received checks from the military, and they're the same kind of checks that a congressman gets. You know, most of it's direct deposit now, but I've gotten the checks. Federal Reserve of the United States are what those checks read. when I was in there. It's also what tax return checks used to read. This past year, they read Department of the United States Treasury. Or Treasury of the United States. I'm not sure. But they read the U.S. Treasury, okay? If Congress is being paid that way now, great. But for a long time, Congress has been paid by the Federal Reserve of the United States. Unconstitutional. As is the Federal Reserve of the United States, it is unconstitutional. But being paid by them, Congress being paid by them, is also unconstitutional per Article 1, Section 6. They're supposed to be paid by the United States Treasury, not an independent private central bank. All right, moving on. It also, this section also says that senators and representatives shall not be questioned in court or by the president for any speech or debate they give or participate in on the floor of the Senate or the House. That allows the freedom of debate in Congress. It's a good thing. May not work out in our favor sometimes, but it's a good thing. If they commit blatant treason in such a debate, don't have an example of that on hand or in my mind, but if they commit blatant treason, obviously we can do something about that. We don't have to question it. It's publicized on C-SPAN. Yay. Kind of a close example. We'll say Adam Schiff going up there and reading this completely bullshit, bogus, fake phone call that Trump had with Ukraine. He read it as if it were true, purposely to mislead all the citizens of the United States. To me, that could be considered treasonous. Surely enough, Adam Schiff has committed treason multiple times, but that one act could be considered treasonous, to me at least. And we have it on record. It's on file. It's on video. We could see it. And he had no idea. He didn't think that Trump would ever release the transcript of the call, which proved him to be a liar, which we all knew already. And then he had to come back and, you know, he knew there was some still accountability that could be taken for that speech he gave on the floor. And he came out and said, oh, it was just a parody. There is still some accountability that can be had, even though they are protected from being questioned about those on the floor. Article 1, Section 6 provides in addition that senators and representatives cannot be appointed to offices, the salaries of which have been increased during the time of their service in Congress. Offices under the president, Supreme Court, other offices outside of the legislative branch, they cannot be appointed to those if their salaries have been increased during their time in Congress. This was broken with Hillary Clinton being appointed to Secretary of State. That had been increased. The salary had been increased during her time in office. It's been broken other times too. But this is the ineligibility clause. It's an ethics rule just to prevent members of Congress from increasing the salary of an executive office and then getting the president to appoint them to that office so that they can get that benefit of that increased salary. Kind of like insider trading for positions of authority. So, finally, Section 6 provides that no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either House during his continuance in office. This provision is of profound structural importance since it prevents the appointment of powerful senators or congressmen to the president's cabinet, thus reinforcing the separation of legislative and executive power. Without that incompatibility clause, you could have powerful senators demanding to be appointed into a president's cabinet. And they would have to, the president being a member of their party would end up having to give them that. And it would create a government that we don't want. So what accounts or what counts as an office under the United States? The office of the president is not such an office, supposedly, according to some people, because the president presides over the executive branch, not in the executive branch. You ask me, absolutely. The president is in the executive branch. We have an existing executive branch. The president is at the top of that branch. Still in the branch. Anyways, members of the National Guard, military reserve officers, can that be considered an office? Can a member of Congress simultaneously serve in the reserves? Federal court was faced with that question in the 70s and held that that did violate the incompatibility clause, but they dismissed the case on the grounds the plaintiffs lacked the standing to raise the question. That's kind of one that's open for debate. What offices are considered under this Section 6 that they can't go into? Again, some of this has happened prior. Hillary Clinton was, that's the main one, the easiest, the most recent, I think, instance of her being appointed to an office that had been increased salary while she voted to increase the salary and then took that office. She benefited from that. You see how it's insider trading for positions of authority. So, you know, this is a good article to have. There's a lot more really to it to understand, to delve into. You could hit things from a different angle and debate this one section of Article 1 quite a bit. You got to look into this. You know, some of these sections of articles, pretty easy, straightforward to understand, no big deal. But something like this, Section 6 of Article 1, you really got to delve into it. You got to look at different interpretations. You got to read it, reread it, and read it again, and figure out what you believe it's saying. You have to understand how our government works, what they are and are not supposed to do. You know, you may be the person, you may be the one person out of 330 million people in the United States who understands this well enough to, when something happens and you see it, you see Senator Chuck Schumer appointed to Defense Secretary of the United States, and you realize that's not supposed to happen for whatever reason, under Section 6, under another section of a different article, you may be the one person that realizes that. And why does that matter? Because you may be the one person equipped to bring this up in court, take it to the Supreme Court, and get a precedent against it again, so that we then have a constitutional article or amendment or whatever it is, and we have a court precedent affirming such. It is important to know how your government works, what they are and are not supposed to do, how we are and are not supposed to pick our representatives, i.e. senators are supposed to be picked by the state legislatures, not by the people. And that is a good thing. You need to understand why that's a good thing. You got to understand the Constitution. I understand that people can't get out and they can't go take a Constitution class, which some places offer. People go around the United States and they teach Constitution classes. You may not have the time for that. That's why I'm doing this. Give you something to listen to. Hopefully you learn something, and hopefully you buy a copy of the Constitution and you start reading through it. It's good to have a copy, because you never know. Next year, they might try to change some word or two in it to change the meaning of it. So you have a copy before they do that, and you know what it really said. Whatever the case, know your rights. All right? Why, in times of slavery, why do the masters not want the slaves to be able to read or write? They want them to remain ignorant, So they can't, they're less likely to rebel. They can't fight back, or they don't know their rights. If you don't know your rights, they're easy to be taken from you. So get on the Constitution, learn it, spread it, teach other people about it. You know, I'm not an expert in the Constitution, but I've gone through it. I've read it. I understand most of it, and I'm still learning. All right. I don't claim to be an expert, but I'm trying to help other people grow and learn about what we're supposed to look like. If you know what we're supposed to look like and you look at what we have, then you know we're not really that close to what we're supposed to look like. So that's my goal, just to help people learn. I hope somebody bites on something that I'm putting in these about the Constitution and you dive in. Go down this Constitution rabbit hole. Learn everything you can about it. If one person does it, perfectly fine with that. Guys, thank you again for listening. I really appreciate it. Please like, Rumble, subscribe, share, everything. Help me grow. Help me get these out to more people. Greatly appreciate it. Guys, have a great rest of your weekend, and I will be back at you next Thursday.